Hello, and welcome to
What the heck?
Strange, spooky, and confusing tales, the podcast about stories that make us go,
What the heck? I'm Victoria Howard.
And I'm Laura Munson, and we are back for our second episode coming to you from sunny Fort Mill, South Carolina.
Thank you so much to everyone who listened to our first episode. We got so much support over the past week. I honestly didn't expect it, and I'm just really glad that y'all enjoyed this show.
It's been wonderful. We have gotten everyone we know, it seems like, has been like,
what the heck?
All my energy is going into what the heck now.
Yeah, it's literally been so kind. I sent so many little bubble eye emojis. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like, cute face.
Yeah, the like Puss in Boots face.
Yeah, I sent it like at least 27 times.
I was sending a lot of the one that's like the soft smile with the hearts all over it.
Mm-hmm.
That was the one that I was sending. Mm-hmm. I also got a really nice message from Evan Harris. He's one half of the Bearded Ones out of Greenville, South Carolina. He said he's nice. Gonna give me a little shout out. So thank you, Evan. And y'all go listen to the Bearded Ones with
yes.
Evan Harris and Jason Underwood. They're so funny.
Yeah, because we cannot provide you with beards.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately.
They are not always bearded themselves, because, you know, a man must take a break.
Oh.
But, you know, they're usually bearded.
False marketing.
Well, you know, like, they're actors.
Okay.
You take the beard off once in a while.
I need to stop being mean to them, because they're being very kind to us.
You keep being mean to the theater
people.
I know,
people. I'm sorry.
It's okay. We're weird.
I love theater people.
You can be mean to me all you want.
So actually, fun fact, we originally recorded episode 2 last week when we recorded episode 1, and...
It died.
Sad death, but...
A very crunchy death.
Basically, the problem I had done with recording the first time, we recorded the second time using the same thing.
We spent like an hour recording 2 episodes and then listened to them, and they sounded like...
Crunchy.
They sounded crunchy.
Yeah, they sounded like a nice big bag of Doritos, which is fun, but yeah.
They sounded like a Doritos Locos Taco.
Yes, and not in a good way, unfortunately.
No. Yeah.
And also, I sounded a little crunchy a few times in the last episode. I don't know who noticed that. I noticed it every single time it happened. So I'm going to do my best. I just did it. I'm going to do my best not to yell anymore, because I just be yelling.
You know, sometimes we all be yelling.
Yeah.
I'm just the one with the velvety smooth voice.
My voice can be velvety smooth.
Yeah, we can all be velvety smooth if we try.
Velvety smooth.
Welcome to my ASMR. I'm going to like... rustling some paper.
Stop it now. Oh, all right,
God.
So
we really don't know what we're doing today. We're just over here.
We're just hanging out.
So you're telling a story today.
I am telling a story.
Aren't you?
So I had considered retelling you what we told last week, but honestly, that episode turned out so cursed that I knew that I needed to have a new story.
Mm-hmm.
So I was looking around for a while for the perfect story to tell. I wanted it to be something relevant to me, the same way that the Greenville Theater was for you. And I started overthinking it. So last night I realized I just need to do the one that has been my OG go-to what the heck story.
Perfect.
And today I'm going to tell you about the incident at the Dyatlov Pass.
Oh.
Yes. So...
I love some spooky Russian shit.
Right? It's actually crazy. I have been obsessed with this story for so long. I have listened to so many podcasts, watched so many videos, read so many blog posts, websites, all about it. Because what happened there is so weird, and there's so many elements that just don't add up with any of the theories about what happened.
That's what happens in Soviet Russia.
Yes. Oh yeah, it was the Soviets. I almost forgot that. Okay.
Here we go.
Okay, so just so you know, like I said, there is an insane amount of information. We could do an entire podcast dedicated for like a season and a half to the Dyatlov Pass incident and all the different theories, every single element of what happened, but we only have 30, 45 minutes. So I'm going to give you a brief version of what happened.
Thank you. My attention span is very short.
Okay, yeah, because mine kind of is too, so it works out for us.
It works out.
That being said, a lot of the things I'm going to tell you, it's either stuff that I sort of remember from all the stuff I've listened to, but mostly my references were the dyatlovpass.com, which is a conglomeration. That's not the right word.
Conglomerate?
I think it's one person. He put together everything that there is, basically, out there about the pass, everything. And then I also reference Wikipedia for, you know, because... I love Wikipedia.
Because this isn't an academic paper, so we're good.
Exactly. You know what? Nothing matters when it's not for school.
Okay. For legal reasons, that is a joke.
All right. So this story begins when a group of 10 college students who were experienced hikers set out on January 27th, 1959. They were going on a skiing expedition across the Ural Mountains. Ural, I think. Quick side note before I continue on, there's a lot of Russian names, places, and things, and I'm sorry in advance. I will do my very best. I think every time I have listened to a podcast about this, people pronounce the names differently, so I don't really know what's going on, but I'm not helping the fact by saying them without actually trying to figure it out.
You know what? You're doing your best.
All these hikers were really looking forward to this trip because they were all certified level 2 hikers. And once the trip was over, they would be certified level 3 hikers. And that's because the hike that they were going on was set to be a category 3. Now, I don't know that much about hiking, so I can't give you that many details about it. But basically, they were excited to attain one of the highest levels of hiking instruction that you can.
It's kind of like a black belt for hiking.
Exactly, exactly. And they were a part of like a, not a school, for like a club, a hiking club, basically.
Love that.
Yeah, so they all had lots of experience. They knew what they were doing. So on their second day out, one of the hikers, Yuri Yudin, actually got sick and left the group and headed back home. So it ended up being 9 of them out on the route. And these 9 were Igor Dyatlov, so the namesake, and he was actually the organizer and leader of the group. Then we had Yuri Doroshenko, Lyudmila Dubinina, Yuri Krivonishenko, Alexander Kolevatov, Zina Komogorova, Rustim Solbodin, Nikolai Thibu Brignoles, and Semyon Zolotaryov.
I'm very proud of you.
Thank you. And
I'm sure you got those like 60% right.
Yes, thank you so much. And that was really hard, but I wanted to say their names because as I tell the story, I think sometimes it's easy for us to forget that this like happened to real people. Mm-hmm. And they were all college students or had recently graduated. And then in one case, he was a professor working towards his doctorate. But I think that, you know, there's a lot of information out there that makes it seem like incredibly sensationalized where we forget about the fact that this was real people that this happened to. So that's why I wanted to tell their names.
That's good.
Yeah. So based on what they found after the fact of the diaries and the photos of the trip following Yudin leaving, the hike seemed to be going really well, except for the fact that there was some in-group fighting, and namely the fact that Igor was, according to Zina in her diaries, she said he was being rude and just generally unpleasant, and that does have to go into some of the theories. I don't think any of the ones that I'm going to cover today, because we don't have that much time, but if you want to do any more research into this story, Laura, look into, like, everything.
I'll look into Igor.
Do it. Sketchy fella. Actually, not really. I feel bad saying that. So the story really kind of kicks into gear on February 1st. The group started out late and got about 500 meters. Oh, I meant to translate all this into feet, but I didn't. So it's all in meters.
You know what? If people don't know the metric system, then they can deal with that on their end.
Okay, I don't actually know the metric system, so...
Oh. Well, you can deal with that on your end.
Thank you. I just copied what it said on the Dyatlov Pass website.
A meter is about... You know what a yard is?
Yeah.
It's like a couple yards, I think.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's more than I thought it was. Okay.
I think so. It's pretty... Damn, do I know the metric system?
I don't think you do.
Ah, shit. I'm a dumb... I have a degree. Anyway, back to your story. Okay. I'm sorry. Tell me about the Dyatlov Pass, please.
Yes. So the group started out late on February 1st. They got about 500 meters off of their planned route, actually, and they only covered about 2 kilometers for that day. They pitched their tent on the north slope of Kolatsaykal, which is a mountain. It is believed that by February 2nd, the group are all dead.
Oh, no.
And obviously it's believed because no one survived, so no one knows the exact times of death, but based on everything we know, it makes the most sense.
Side note, a meter is about 3 feet.
Okay, I feel like I knew that. Yeah. When you said 6 feet? I was like, wait, hold on.
Okay, so February 2nd.
February 2nd, the group are all dead. So the group was actually expected to be home and completed their trip by, or not home, but they expect to be completed their trip and at their, like, next base camp by February 12th. But they weren't, when they weren't there on time, no one was really that surprised because, you know, you go out hiking slash skiing and things happen, you could be late. And it actually isn't until the families of those on the trip decide that they really need a rescue operation out there. And on February 20th, a rescue operation heads out to look for the group. On February 26th, the rescue teams found the tent. One of the members of the rescue party who found the tent said the tent was half torn down and covered with snow. It was empty and all of the group's belongings and shoes had been left behind. So this is obviously a huge red flag. They know that they're probably going to find not great results from their searches. So no one's at the camp, but the investigators did find that the tent had been cut open with a knife from the inside, an important element, and there were sets of footprint of people walking away. Some of them were wearing socks, some of them were wearing a single shoe, and some were barefoot. And these footprints were through the snow, and they were definitely of people walking, so they weren't running away, kicking up snow behind them. So these footprints lead them down toward the edge of nearby woods. And at the edge of these woods, under a very large cedar tree, are the bodies of Yuri Kriveshenko and Yuri Doroshenko. And they are with the remnants of a small fire. The pair are barefoot and they are dressed only in their underwear, which is something that has always struck me as just being insane. And there are branches broken off of that cedar tree up to 5 meters. So they have been trying to get up in the tree, maybe looking for the camp, or maybe trying to get away from something. So then the next day, on February 27th, the bodies of Igor Dyatlov and Zina Kolmogorova were found 300 and 630 meters from the cedar tree. On March 5th, the body of Rustem Slobodin was found 480 meters away from the tree. So based on the positions of all three of these bodies, they were all trying to get back to the campsite. So they were basically like mid-stride, kind of like facing the campsite, trying to get back.
That's weird.
Yeah, there's a lot. It gets weirder. There's like a lot of weird things.
So basically it's looking like they hacked their way out of this tent and then tried to turn back and then died somehow.
Yes. So all of the ones that were found out by the tree and then between the tree and the camp were actually declared to have died via hypothermia. Huh. One of the reasons being is that they were all in different arrays of undressed for the weather. So the three that were found between the tent and the tree were all dressed better than the ones that were naked, basically. Well, they weren't naked. They were in their underwear, excuse me. Igor was moderately dressed and he had two different socks on each foot. So like one was wool and one was cotton and he had no shoes on. Zina was also moderately dressed, and she was wearing three pairs of socks and then no shoes. Rustem was the most adequately dressed of the five that were found, and he was wearing four pairs of socks, but he only had one boot on his right foot.
So that makes me think that he was really scrambling to get out of there, and like, where the heck is my other shoe?
It's crazy. So, like I said, none of the bodies had any sort of injuries. There was a small crack on Rustin's skull, but it was no way adequate to have killed him. So the cause of death was declared hypothermia. So those were the first five expeditioners found, and it actually took 2 months for the other four to be found. So when they were finally found on May 5th, they were under 4 meters of snow in a ravine about 74 meters further through the woods. So they had gone further into the woods while some of them had stayed at the tree and some of them had gone back towards the camp.
See, I'm not reacting verbally much because I'm literally just staring.
Yeah, Laura's face is like big question marks.
I'm just sitting here with question marks floating over my head because I'm just...
Yeah.
What? What the heck?
It's all crazy.
This is like twisting my mind.
So there was a small makeshift shelter a few meters away from where those four bodies were found. So they were aware that they were in danger and they were trying to protect themselves. Compared to the others, all four of those bodies seemed to be dressed better than the other ones. And there were signs that those who had died first either gave their clothes to the others or the others removed them post-mortem to keep themselves warm.
Oh.
Which is horrifying.
That's weird.
So the analysis of these bodies really ended up switching the way that this investigation was going and the way that all of the theories have gone since then. So three of the bodies were not found to have died from hypothermia. They died from fatal injuries. The injuries, according to Dr. Oh gosh, this one's a really hard one. Boris Vozrozdeheny. Does that sound like a name?
Maybe no. Vozrozdeheny?
Yes, that sounds a lot more like a name.
Boris Vozrozdeheny.
Yes. Wow, such a good Russian accent. Congratulations.
Thank you, I try.
This doctor said that the force required to cause such damage would have had to have been extremely high, but there was not much external damage to the bodies. So there was some sort of weight pressed down upon them, but the amount of snow that they were under was not enough for that. And also it happened ante-mortem. So before they had died. Or like it was their cause of death, basically.
Oh, man. So it's like they were crushed.
Essentially, yeah. And the weirdest part for me is that Lyudmila was found without her tongue. And it was nowhere around. Like, they could not track it down.
Oh, no. Okay, yeah. I don't know why that's more disturbing to me than everything else.
Yeah, it's just like, because, like, I feel like up until this point, it's like, okay, maybe there's some theory, but that tongue, it throws you off.
It's like, everything's, like, very muted weird until you get to that. That's what it's like.
Yeah. What happened? Yeah, what happened? And because, like, it doesn't something make any weird. Sense that a animal would come up and just take her tongue. Also, she was frozen, so, like, her mouth was pretty much frozen shut, as far as I'm aware. So it doesn't make any sense that there would be animal coming out. I don't know why a group member would cut her tongue off if she had died. It doesn't make any sense.
So, wait, sorry if you already said this. Do they know if her tongue was cut out before or after she died?
Ooh, that's a great question, and I'm sure that that's somewhere on the Dyatlov Pass website.
Because I know it was the 50s, and they didn't have as great autopsy technology as they do now.
Yeah, I'm not sure of that information, but yeah, that would definitely make a difference in some things.
Either way, that's freaking weird.
Yeah, either way, it's weird. I don't like that. But it gets even weirder.
Oh, no.
Because some of the clothes that were found with these four were radioactive.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, basically,
were they anywhere near nuclear stuff?
Yeah, so we're gonna get into that.
Oh. Getting ahead of ourselves.
Uh-oh. Yeah. So, that is our summary of events of what happened. And like I said, there is a lot more information out there. Detailed analysis of their clothing that they were wearing. Who was wearing what. We also know, like, who wore who else's clothing when they're down in the ravine. Trading clothes to, like, stay warm. We know who was wearing what. And it's all very intense, and it could all lead to different answers. Well, the Russian government decided that the answer was an avalanche.
Because of course.
Because of course. And so, this theory...
I can picture some guy going, like, so it was avalanche, right? And the other guy's, like, got a gun to his head. Oh, yes, avalanche. It was avalanche.
Yes.
I don't know what that accent was.
It's okay.
It was not Russian.
It was something.
If someone is listening to this and you're Russian, I'm really sorry.
We have no Russians listening. We did have those Irish people listening.
Yes, someone
whoever was
Ireland.
In Ireland listening to us, shout out.
That's pretty cool.
Anyways, so the avalanche theory. Basically, this theory said that the group heard the sound of an avalanche coming and they quickly cut their way out of the tent and they ran away. And maybe some of them thought there wasn't one coming or they realized that there wasn't one coming, so they ran back. Some kept going to like try and find shelter elsewhere. And the two that were still at the tree were looking maybe like be a midway point between everything. So they all knew where they were going and meeting back up. So... this one is a very popular theory, obviously, because it's the official story, but there's a lot of holes in the theory. Namely, why were they all dressed in such light clothing. Like, I feel like if I'm out in the freezing cold, I'm gonna at least be dressed in a coat even when I'm sleeping. And that's what a lot of people have said, like, why, and you know, like, why were some of them barefoot? Wouldn't you be wearing socks to bed if you're sleeping in a tent? Because also they were not burning their stove at the time. So they were all just basically huddled together for warmth. It doesn't make any sense. Also, the tracks weren't running. They were all walking basically calmly away, as far as we can tell. And also, like, the tongue, and just in general, there were no other signs of an avalanche. There was not enough packed hard snow against the tent. There wasn't signs of an avalanche and snow building up against the tree line. There was just no other signs of an avalanche. And also, that area, based on what other hikers have said since the event happened, there's just no, pretty much, it's a very low risk of an avalanche in that area. It doesn't make any sense for that to be the answer. So the investigation actually reopened in 2015, and this theory was the same conclusion again. And they actually said that there were some mistakes made by the initial investigators that caused there to be so many other theories made. But I feel like the mistakes, they don't really tell you what these mistakes were, so it doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
That sounds like a story that they just really wanted to put to bed.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. So, yeah, I'm not buying that. There's just so many things that don't add up, so many questions about their behavior. Just it doesn't make sense. That's pretty much the gist of the story, is that none of those theories really make sense, if you think about it. It's crazy.
And that's the scary part, because it's like, you really can't find an explanation for this.
Yeah, and that's why people reach so far, and they're looking at so many different things.
Something happened. Mm-hmm. Something clearly happened, and there's clearly an answer somewhere, but just...
it's not available.
That's fun. That is such fun.
So, a more recent theory suggests that something called infrared sounds could have been created by the wind going through the mountains, and basically the tent and where they were sleeping, they were in exactly the right place to have these sounds essentially drive them mad and into a panic. So they ran out of the tent, some of them taking their clothes off. They were essentially just, they had their no wits about them with this theory, and they were running out towards the trees. Then the theory was that some of them, they got to the trees, they were out of the line of the infrared sounds, they came back down from their madness. The three that were found going back up the mountain were going back to get their gear, some of their sleeping bags, stuff like that. The three that went down the mountain, they were looking for a place to build a shelter, and then the two in the middle were just keeping an eye on everything. And then, you know, they all died of hypothermia. And that's that theory, but it still doesn't answer all the questions, and it doesn't make sense to me personally. And also just, like, the chances of that happening. Like, I know some of the other theories are even more out there, but the chances of that happening in that perfect spot, them choosing, like, that exact location to stop and spend the night, it's just crazy. And honestly, I think I'd be more down to buy it if it weren't for the fact that they weren't running away. And there was not that many signs of struggle at the tent.
And that's strange, because my initial thought is maybe, like you were saying, the clothes were taken off after their deaths. Mm-hmm. But then you were saying the footprints showed that they were barefoot, a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And they were just walking calmly barefoot after cutting their way out of this tent.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, another thing that I just remembered from the Dyatlov Pass website, the two men that were found underneath that tree, their rigor mortis had actually set in on them. And it set in while they were still face down. So they had been rolled over onto their backs post-mortem before anyone else finding them.
Oh.
Yeah. So for me, that could be like, oh, someone came back from the ravine where they're dressed a little bit more warmly. They find them. They roll them over to see if they're still alive. But still, there's so many unanswered questions. It just doesn't make sense.
I don't like that.
Yeah, no.
I don't like any of this, but I really don't like that.
So, another theory that came up in, I think, 2019 was when it was first, maybe not first presented. I think, 1978, I was getting my dates mixed up, it was kind of first presented that catatopic winds, they're a very rare event, and it's essentially like a hurricane up in the mountains. So, they got scared, ran away, the same kind of thing. So basically, all of these theories so far are that they all got scared and ran away, But that doesn't really make sense, because why would they run away and they're not running? Also, what happened to the tongue?
And why are they radioactive?
Why are they radioactive?
Those are things, like, every time you say any of this, I'm just like, but the radioactive clothing and the tongue. Yes. Those are my two things that I keep thinking
and
about.
And the fact that they were crushed, why would they run away? Like, why were they crushed, but there wasn't an avalanche? Like, no sign of an avalanche happening anywhere.
For some reason, I feel like this is in poor taste, but I keep picturing a Yeti.
Okay. So
I keep picturing that just, like, a Yeti showed up. Like, the abominable snow monster.
Mm-hmm.
And he just sat on him.
So, the Yeti is a very talked about theory this case.
I was about to say, I'm sure that is also a theory that there was just a freaking snow monster. Because there are plenty of people who think like me, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. So, actually, there's some proof that the Yeti could have been to blame for all of this.
Damn it, Yeti.
So, the first piece of proof or evidence, I'm going to show you this photo. It's this photo right here.
Oh.
So, this photo, people are claiming it's the Yeti. Although, honestly, if you look at it, you can definitely just tell it's a man wearing a lot of layers of clothes.
That looks like the Yeti from Disney World.
It really does. It definitely looks really like the guy that, like, waves at you from Mount Everest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or you know what? It looks like, I have this wine glass that my cousin, she does frosted glass, uh-huh. and she made a Bigfoot wine glass for me. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, and it definitely, like, I can see what you're, like, why people would think that, but it also doesn't make sense why they would be taking a photo from this close of this Yeti, and why the photo's so clear.
Yeah, when was that picture taken? It looks...
So that photo was actually taken on the trip.
Oh.
Yeah, so that was of someone on the trip, or of the Yeti on the trip.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of photos from the trip, and honestly, they kind of make me sad, because a lot of the ones are, you know, they're happy, they're having fun, they're just, you know, they're in their 20s, like, having a good time with their friends, you know, like, it's just...
It's like us when we went camping, except they were doing a little more than we did.
Yeah, they definitely did a little more than we did.
They did a little more than we did, but, you know, same energy.
Exactly, and it's just really sad to look at and know, like, what their fate was, and the fact that we don't have any more information.
They were just trying to go on an adventure,
mm-hmm.
and they got Yeti'd.
Yeah, so there was also basically a forged document that was translated to saying, we now know what the snowmen look like, but a lot of people are saying that that's fake, but it's really weird, because, like, I kind of think it's fake, basically because the person who runs dietlovepass.com says it's fake, and
yeah,
I trust them with my life.
It sounds a little fake.
Yeah, but it's also just, it definitely prompted a lot of thoughts, and,
That one reminds me of a creepypasta that someone made up.
Which one? I feel like I know what you're talking about.
Probably the Russian sleep experiment, but any creepypasta where people are just being really dramatic.
You. Isn't that what they do in the Russian sleep experiment?
That's
what they say?
What was it? I know they say, we must remain awake.
Yeah, they're like, we are, it's like that Latin,
we are the evil final, inside
yes,
you.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking of.
That, you know, sleep gets rid of. And it's really stupid. Like, when I was first reading it at 13, it was the scariest.
I thought it was real.
Yeah.
I thought the Russian sleep experiment was a real thing that happened. It took me a long time to realize it wasn't. An embarrassingly long time.
They really had us for a minute, and then they get into a whole, like, they're chomping on each other in there, and...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I also think that it's that, that final dialogue where they're like, we're in you, or whatever you just said.
Yeah, we're the evil that lurks inside.
That's when you know it's a creepypasta, because...
It's like, okay.
No one's delivering a dramatic monologue like that.
When they are just a pile of meat.
Mm-hmm.
So back to real things that happen to real people.
So back to the Yeti, the real things that happen. I don't see what year it was, but Discovery Channel released a documentary entitled The Russian Yeti, The Killer Lives. And in it, they detailed all the ways that the Yeti was responsible for this. But again, this post on dietlovepass.com, it's titled The Profound Awfulness of Discovery's Russian Yeti, The Killer Lives. So it's basically calling it out for being disrespectful and overall just sensationalized and bad. Yeah. I mean, it's still kind of fun to think about, and, like, you know, if I were, like, a kid in Russia and my parents told me the Yeti will get you, like they did the kids on the Dyatlov Pass, I'd be like, oh god, the Yeti will get me. But, yeah, there are also theories about aliens, and those theories tie into what I believe to be, maybe not the truth, but a part of the truth, maybe, and that is that there was military testing happening in the area. So
that's when you get into some wonky shit.
Yeah, so
that's where shit gets weird, especially during the Cold War.
Exactly. So
there was a lot going on during the Cold War that nobody wanted to talk about.
Uh-huh. And then the fact that, you know, it was kind of covered up with this thing that might be true, but there's so much evidence that proves that it's not, it kind of, like, points to the fact that the government was involved in some way. And I don't think that it was intentional, but I think that something happened to where they had to. I'll tell you about it. Hold on. Okay.
Yes, please do.
So, there is speculation. I'm reading a lot of this from Wikipedia because it's a little more concise than the Dyatlov Pass website. There's speculation that the campsite fell within the path of a Soviet parachute mine exercise. So, they were shooting off these mines, and they weren't expecting anyone to be there. And so, the hikers woke up from the explosions, and then they ran away, and then they weren't able to return. And there was a lot of other stuff going on. So, they think that these people up at the planes that were dropping these bombs and doing all this stuff saw that they were, or hold on, I'm going to backpedal. I'm getting ahead of myself. So it was either the parachute mine exercises or they were testing some new crazy weapon like they did during the Soviet War or the Cold War, because America and the Soviets did that, let's be honest.
Yeah.
MK Ultra.
Oh yeah.
I actually almost did MK Ultra. Everything's connected.
Wait, what? We'll talk about that later.
So basically they think, what I think happened is that there were these exercises happening, some sort of radioactive explosive device, you know, came, and the people were scared of their tents. They went out of the tent. They cut themselves out. It still doesn't really make sense why they were walking, but they walked down to the tree line. Maybe they, like, heard the explosion and they left. There was only one, so they were, like, kind of being quiet about it, not really running, but they were, yeah. You know. Like, you can finagle anything, really, to fit this. Or, like, anything you want can fit this story if you finagle it, right?
But, you do some mental gymnastics.
Yeah, exactly. So, basically, then they have that same idea that they ran away. What I think happens is they're running away. Someone in a plane sees them, realizes that they're going to know that they're messing with these crazy technological advances, and they can't be exposed. So he radios in to the control. At this point, the five of them that were originally found are actually already dead. So they died of hypothermia, so they don't have to take care of them. But the Soviet people go down the hill. They find the four that are camped out. And they kill them to cover up their mistakes and what they were doing.
Just keep them quiet.
Yes. So that explains why three of those folks died in a different way. So maybe that other one person died before the Soviets got there, and then the other three were killed. And then the tongue was taken for who knows what reason, honestly.
Yeah, the tongue is still throwing me off.
The tongue throws me off a lot.
I forgot about that part. I was thinking, that explains the radioactive clothing.
Yeah, but then also, if you think about it, it doesn't make sense also why the two men were trying to climb up the cedar tree. And yeah. They were trying really aggressively to climb up the cedar tree. Like, they were found, their palms, I don't want to say, I'm going to say these words, I'm sorry. They were a pulpy mess. That always sticks out to me. So they were so frantically trying to climb the tree, and that is actually another one of the things that people say proves the Yeti was there.
And that's interesting because it seems like they were so calmly walking to the tree, and then sometime between them getting to the tree and them starting to climb, their anxiety level must have ramped up.
Yeah. So that actually brings me to another theory that I also think is another good one, and that is that drugs were involved. So, there were no toxicology reports, pretty obviously, of the bodies, because it was the 50s, or late 50s.
Substances do things.
Yeah, so a lot of people believe that there might have been either accidental or intentional consumption of shrooms. And, you know, that can cause you to act in weird ways. So someone ripped open the tent, they all went outside, looking up at the stars, started walking away. They don't realize how cold they are. You know, there's like, I think that that kind of attributes for a lot of the weirdness of the way they behaved. But it doesn't make sense for the deaths themselves and the fact that some of them were crushed and some of them, and the one girl was missing her tongue.
I feel like it definitely wasn't any one thing on this list. Mm-hmm. I feel like it could definitely be a combination of a few of these things.
Right?
Like, maybe there was the nuclear stuff going on, but then there was also some sort of creature. Maybe even not a Yeti. Maybe just a bear. There's a lot of freaking bears.
And there's, like, there. The other weird thing about, like, I guess one of the holes in the Soviet weapon theory was that not all of their stuff was radioactive and not all of their equipment was. It was only, like, a few articles of clothing, basically. But, like, why were even a few articles of clothing radioactive?
Yeah.
What happened? There's also a photo. I'll end us here because I think that we're coming up to time. And honestly, I could talk about this for forever and, like, analyze different things. And there's so many other little details, like I said about the stove. Oh, and then the whole thing with Igor being an asshole to everyone. Like, people are like, oh, could he have murdered them? Like, could there have been, like, some other plot happening? There's, like, there's so many different levels of conspiracy and theories that are happening around this story. It's insane.
Yeah.
But those are some of the either more relevant theories or theories that I think are most likely to have been the case. But yeah, I was going to end for you, Laura. There is a photo of military testing / the aliens.
The aliens.
Hold on, I have to pull it back up. I think I closed it.
See, the great thing about the show is that I'm ending this just even more confused than before.
Right? The thing is, there's never an answer to this story.
We don't pretend to be solving this shit. We're just laying it out and letting you decide.
Okay, so just so you know, to the left of this photo is a photo of the one of them postmortem.
I can take it.
But this is what everyone says the aliens are. I just think it's a weird flash in the camera. But
That looks like when I drop my phone and accidentally take a picture.
Right? Like someone made a mistake.
Also, that postmortem picture is very sad. And
it's horrifying. I have unfortunately seen a lot of these, but there is a lot of postmortem photos. And
it's crazy. Just, it really makes you think, like, what did these people go through?
Yeah, like, why? Like, how did this happen? What happened?
Like, and you think about it. You know, this is one of those things that seems obvious, but it really hits you when you really think about it. They are the only ones that know what happened.
And then if you also, like, that one man, Yuri Yovich, excuse me if I got that wrong, I'm not looking at my paper, he left. Like, he could have been involved and he left. And until he died in 2013 and he was, like, 75. And the entire time, you know, he had to live knowing that he could have been there. He had no idea what had happened. Everything seemed normal to him.
That's got to be some crazy survivor's guilt.
Right? It's insane.
That's something that weighs on you.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
I don't really know where to go from here.
Well, so you were saying you think your theory that you're really thinking about is the Soviet one, right?
Yeah, because I think that it would kind of make sense it's the only one that makes sense with the tongue being cut out for me.
Yeah.
Is if there was another person on the ground.
It seems like that the tongue seems like something a human would do.
Exactly. And so that makes sense. Also, it could have been that person, the Soviet person, maybe what they were doing right there wasn't anything nuclear or having radiation involved. But that person somehow had it on him, so he spread it in a way.
True, they could have been in
in, like, contact.
Radiation or suits or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, like, it could have been a lot of things with that. And I just think that there being another person there just answered a lot of questions for me.
That seems about right, yeah.
But also, like I said, the drugs, that makes sense too.
Honestly, I feel like it was that kind of thing with there being another person there, but even if it wasn't drugs, maybe it was some kind of combination of the radioactive stuff, and then maybe even part of this weapons testing created the infrared sound thing that messed with their brains.
Yeah.
So they...
There's a lot of layers.
I feel like it's definitely a combination of a few different factors that...
I agree.
...led to these people's tragic passing when they were just trying to... They were just trying to have fun.
Yeah, they were having, if you look at the photos, I would definitely recommend it. Just because, like, don't look at the postmortem photos, but maybe the photos of them on the mountain. Because also, I don't want to, like, make this a lesson, but it's just a nice reminder to always, you know, enjoy the time that you have with your friends.
You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, you never know what's going to happen. You never know when your death will result in some insane Yeti conspiracy theories. Although, if I do go that way, and that's the result of it, I'm okay with that.
Be careful what you say, because now someone's gonna, someone's
gonna murder me and frame it as being the Yeti.
Looks like something a Yeti would do. Yeti came to Rock Hill, South Carolina. I don't know how it got there.
Murdered Victoria.
This is just like fucked right back off to the mountains, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, you know.
Yeah. Damn. All right. Well.
Yeah. So.
Thank you.
You're fine. I was going to say, that was my first story. That was the Diet Love Pass
incident. Good job. And honestly,
thank you.
You know, you said that was your OG what the heck story. I feel like we're starting with our OG stories, so that's good.
Mm-hmm.
We're starting with the stories that really made us first say, what the heck? We're getting better at that.
Oh my gosh, I'm so proud of us.
Wow, we're so amazing. Holy shit.
Yes. So, as we turn away from our downtrodden hearts...
let's cheer us up. It's time for a heck yeah.
Who's first?
You told the story, so you're first.
Oh, okay. I forgot that was how we were doing it. So my heck yeah is going to be that my baby sister just turned 13.
Yay!
She is such a wonderful little girl. Her name's Natalie.
She's not a little girl anymore.
She's a teenager. It's insane.
Oh my goodness.
And I got to spend like 5 days with her this past week, and it was just a lot of fun. We just hung out. Played Mario Kart on her new Switch. I took her to go makeup shopping my last day there, which was really cute. Lots of fun. Natalie, I'm going to force you to listen to this, so I love you.
I've met you once, Natalie, but I love you too. You're an icon.
She is a legend. What's your heck yeah, Laura?
My heck yeah. Oh, I had a couple and I completely blanked. I am about to go see my mom and my sister. We're going to the lake. And
I love a lake.
I forgot which lake, but we're going to go into the woods and not get murdered by a monster, hopefully.
Oh my god. I'm sorry for scaring you.
We're going to get got by a lake monster. Victoria's going to be like, so we're going to have to end this series very early on because Laura got devoured. Our final episode. My final
what the heck will be. What the heck happened to Laura?
Yeah.
Well, I hope that y'all have fun. What lake are y'all going to?
I don't know. I forgot.
Oh, just a lake.
I'm just glad that we're going to a lake. We're going to kayak and we're going to chill.
Nice, nice.
We're going to hang out and bond.
Heck yeah.
Be away from humans who carry disease. So.
That's the best kind of fun.
Yes.
Yes.
All right. Is it outro time?
I believe it is outro time.
You want to do it or should I?
You can do it. My voice sounds tired.
All right, then. Thank you for listening to What the Heck? Strange, Spooky, and Confusing Tales. If you like what you heard, make sure you follow us on Instagram and Twitter at What the Heck Cast, as in podcast. That's our handle on both. Listen to our new episodes every Wednesday and tell all your friends about our show. You can find us on Spotify, Pocket Casts, Breaker, Radio Public, Overcast, and Apple Podcasts, and probably some more platforms very soon.
Yeah, we're always trying to improve. Y'all be safe.
Love you.
Be kind to each other.
And be kind to yourselves. And wear a mask and wash your hands.
Amen. Goodbye.
Bye.